Etienne van Heerden is one of South Africa's leading Afrikaans writers. Back in the 80s, he wrote several novels critical of the government. He was one of the Afrikaans writers who secretly met the banned African National Congress in Zimbabwe. Today, van Heerden teaches at the University of Cape Town and continues to write fiction. He told Steve Paulson that many South African writers are obsessed with their country's history.
People ask us writers, now that apartheid is gone, what are you going to write about? The interesting thing is that authors like Jame Coetzee, who's known here, and Zeke Mda, and Andre Brink, and I would say a few others that are known here in America, many others that are not known here, are all writing historical fiction. So there's this obsession with the past, which you also find, for example, in Germany or in the Netherlands, any country that went through a traumatic history, traumatic events.
Is it all writing about the apartheid years?
It's about the apartheid years and going back further, you know, because we've got a history with so many silences under oppression, under state censorship, under apartheid propaganda. You had one canonized history, a sense of events. And writers now feel that they've got to go back. The easy term people use is to say you must reinvent the past. But it's more in the sense of, well, almost a therapeutic process.
So where does a novelist fit into this? I mean, I can imagine the importance of historians who are uncovering
Yes.
information that had been suppressed, but
Yes.
what about the imaginative writer?
Well, it's interesting that, well, the relationship between historiography and fiction is always fascinating. You know, you had it in America with your new journalists during the Vietnam War. We in South Africa, when I started out as a writer, we had the Angolan War, you know, with Cubans there in South Africa fighting there and so on. And
this was sort of an unacknowledged war, wasn't it, in South Africa?
My first book of prose was called My Cuban, and it was about a young soldier shooting a Cuban soldier in Angola. And when the book was published, in that same time, our Minister of Defense was saying on television that we are not fighting in Angola. It's all rumors, you know. So we, as young authors then, we saw our role as that of alternative documenters, if that's the right English word, alternative historians, if you wish, and creating what has been called subsequently as a kind of a contra-history. So from my beginnings as a writer, there was this consciousness of the writer not really having a duty, because I think it's dangerous to say an artist has got it. You only have one duty, and that the duty is to write well. But still, there's some kind of, let's say, in certain societies at certain times, writers tend to view themselves as alternative historians, then, if you wish.
When you were writing about the Angolan War, was it strictly through fiction, or were you doing journalism too?
It was fiction. And I also did a lot of literary cabarets in the German and the Dutch tradition. I never performed, but I wrote the texts, you know. And
literary cabarets?
What does that
mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's quite unknown in the sort of Anglo-Saxon and the American world. It's from the German tradition and the Dutch tradition. It's protest songs with little pieces of theater in between. And that was a very effective, I'm speaking of the early 80s, very effective journalistic method of saying what is going on and of protesting in a time of censorship, you know.
Could you do something as a fiction writer that journalists, straightforward journalists, were not allowed to do because they just couldn't get it published?
That was the whole idea. There was extreme censorship on state television, radio, and newspapers. And because writing, you know, we serious writers, it sounds so pretentious, but we create literature which is aimed at a small market, and in a sense it was tolerated.
So you could publish those?
We published them.
The government wasn't sort of checking things out?
No, we had, you know, things are always complex. We had our difficulties, but on a very more subtle basis. For example, the army officers' wives... Sorry, it's sexist, but this is what it was. The wives had a club countrywide, and they made a decision at some conference that each of them would write a letter to my publisher protesting against a novel. You know the term AWOL? Absent without official leave? And this novella came out in 1983, and it was called To AWOL, and it was anti-war, basically. And so the publisher was inundated with with letters. And you had all sorts of subtle thrusts, and there were visits and stuff. But we weren't banned. And that was interesting because the government, you know, Pieter Dirk Uys, who's well known as a satirist, used to say the government is his best advertisement, because the moment they say something against one of his plays, people just flock and go and see it. So it was a complex situation.
Did you ever feel threatened personally?
Yes, we did have problems, yes. Yeah, but that was long ago, and we're in a new situation now.
Now, you are commonly identified as one of South Africa's leading Afrikaans writers, and I guess I'm wondering what that label means, other than the fact that you write in Afrikaans rather than in English.
Yes. Well, it does mean that publishing worldwide is centralized within English. I mean, you will not call Jane Goodseer the leading South African English novelist. You just call him the leading South African novelist. So as soon as you move from a language outside of English, the language will be named, whether you're writing in Xhosa or Zulu or whatever. For me, Afrikaans, my mother was English-speaking. My father was Afrikaans. And I grew up typically Afrikaans, you know.
So you spoke Afrikaans in your home?
On Tuesdays, we spoke English.
That was a household
that
rule?
That was the concession. Well, it was more a concession to my mother from my father. And for us, it was a rule as kids, myself and my brother. And we got comics, you know, the Beano book. And the Line comic was imported from London by boat, I suppose, in those days, and then came very late, and then by train to our farm, which was very far flung and so on. So we, you know, and we had a good library in town, and both my parents were readers, so I read a lot of English and so on.
So when you were growing up, did English seem more like the language of liberation than Afrikaans?
It did, although you must never forget that more than 50% of Afrikaans speakers are not white.
Hmm.
And these people don't generally know.
Right, because that's when I asked you the question, what does it mean to be an Afrikaans writer?
Yes.
I mean, I sort of in the back of my mind, I'm sort of thinking, do you feel the weight of history because
you were
part of the white oppression?
No, you do feel the weight of history, but you must also say that the language had the image as the language of oppression. But also in those times, my texts, for example, were protest texts, but then you had a lot of what is called black Afrikaans writers. Maybe you would refer to them as colored Afrikaans writers, you know, descendants from the slaves and from the Khoisan within South Africa. And they wrote in Afrikaans as well. So there's a strong literary tradition. Think of Breiten Breitenbach and André Brink, the older generation of writers. And going even further back, a strong tradition of Afrikaans as also being the carrier of opposition.
Hmm.
But of course, this is known, you know, the, what is known as is the image of the language as an apartheid language. And what happened was that the National Party, when it came to power in 1948, looked for something around which to rally nationalism. And they took the Afrikaans language and they used it as a sort of a cultural political vehicle to rally support and nationalism in an effort, you know, to carry through their policies.
But I would think the politics then would be complicated for you as an up-and-coming writer to choose to write in this language, Afrikaans, that had been designated by the apartheid government as the language of the oppressor.
You know, you don't choose to write in your own language, you write in it. It would have been a choice to write in English. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you biologically or naturally, you grow up Afrikaans, you think I thought in Afrikaans and I write, that's my language.
So it was never
and
really, even though you speak English very well
it
now.
It was always a debate. I mean, but I was not going to give my language away to these people. You understand? It's my language. And up till now, again, for example, South Africa has 11 official languages. Which means one thing, and that is that English is the official language because of economic reasons. You can't really, you know, translate every document in 11 languages. So now you would find that a younger generation of Afrikaans writers look at English with longing eyes.
Mm.
And this is worrying to me because it's something which has happened all over Africa, that the best authors from all the countries have gone for the so-called colonial languages, French or English. If you look at any great African writer well-known, they've made it in these languages. And I think it's a great cultural loss for the continent That great writing isn't done in the indigenous languages.
Etienne van Heerden talking with Steve Paulson. Van Heerden's latest novel is called The Long Silence of Mario Salviati.